Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
Got to poop, Kate?
You got to poop?
Let's get this show on the road.
No, go poop.
If you need to.
No,
go poop.
It's just things.
I don't want you uncomfortable.
Things are shifting.
All right. Well, we'll be prepared should you need to go poop.
You ever get that stabbing? It's deep inside you, and you know specifically it's like a turd rounding the bend. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever? You guys ever heard the term? You ever heard the term radar ass?
No.
Where like so radar ass is when you have to poop. And your ass just knows when you're getting close to home in your toilet. So it starts coming more and more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you get diarrhea fingers where you lose all control of your fingers.
Yeah.
What? No.
Yeah. Like you get diarrhea fingers where when you go into the bathroom and you like try to, you can't mess with your belt buckle fast enough and you can't get it off.
I thought you meant you're trying to hold it in.
No.
I was like, Kyle. Kyle, you're saying yes?
No. I've never held poop in my butt with my hands.
I was like, all three of them are agreeing to this?
Yeah.
All right, let's just keep that as the opening. Today is a Friday episode here on Zero Block 30, and it's presented by our good friends at ArborTech. ArborTech Tools is the place to be if you want to do power carving, power sanding, power chiseling, power anything. Power having a good time, my friends, because ArborTech Tools will help you do that. They'll send it in a lovely case. A lot of tools come with very shitty cases. Lots of them. Like, I have a bunch of them. I just toss it out. This bad boy, it's good enough to be a little briefcase if you want to be a fancy boy with it or a fancy girl. Make sure you go to arbortechtools.com/zero. Use the promo code zero for 25% off. That's ArborTechTools.com/zero. Kate, what's the phonetic alphabet there?
Starting with ArborTech?
Yeah.
Alpha. That's correct. Romeo.
That's correct.
Bravo. Octagon.
All right. ArborTechTools.com/zero. Use the promo code zero. Today we have five rounds in the magazine. Round number one, a sergeant major in 2-7 is getting roasted like a green weenie over some hot coals of NCO raids this week. And there's some viral means to prove it. Why? Apparently, he went all Grinch mode and threatened to take away the Marines' holiday. Stanley, take away New Year's. From our Jim, take away New Year's from Stanley. Round number two, in the wake of Vanessa Guillen's murder, Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy announced that 14 leaders at Fort Hood were being fired or suspended, and an independent review has revealed that an environment where women were in survival mode. We speak with Haley Britsky of Task and Purpose, who has been covering the story. You're going to like listening to Haley. She's very smart, very articulate, and walks us through what happened there very well. You're going to enjoy that. Round number three, keep it down. Round three is about the quietest place in the United States and how the Navy is ruining it with their loud-ass planes. And round number four, Kanz is going to sit down with former Naval Academy and NFL player Napoleon McCollum to talk about a game that is happening this weekend or something. I don't know. There's a game, I guess.
A game?
Yeah, there's a game.
Like a sports ball game?
Yeah, there's a sports ball game.
Never heard of it.
Sports. Round sports. Five. Kyle took the ZBT Twitter to ask you to tell us you're in the military without saying that you're in the military. We had some great responses from the baby girls this week. So we're going to go over
those baby girls.
Some of them. We're going to do all that starting right now. Here's some music. Cons and Kate are going to be able to go to the Army-Navy game this weekend. Not a lot of media is getting credentialed. There's not going to be a lot of people in the stadium, unlike years past when we've gone down to Philly. It's at Army. It's going to be at West Point. And Cons and Kate get to go sit in the press box. Cons, how difficult is it going to be for you to not show any emotion while you're in the press box?
Oh, my goodness gracious. So I've done it before, and it really
but
is.
But not for Army-Navy.
No, never for Army-Navy. So it was torture at other games, especially in games
against fucking Ball State. This slaps a little different.
slightly. So this is going to be extremely difficult for me to just sit there stoically. I actually might just walk out and just find a place to stand, even if it has to be outside the stadium, just so I can react. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what you're going to have to do. Kate's going to be on fire watch on Cons. That's basically what she's going to do. She's going to be Cons' NCOIC.
Well, earlier this week when it looked like we were going to be able to go, I started looking on Amazon for a very large foam Navy Destroyer hat that I could wear just with a nice press outfit, but then just this giant obnoxious hat in the press booth. But thank God for Cons' luck that I couldn't find one.
That doesn't sound like you, Kate, taking a normal moment and making it weird. That doesn't sound like something you would do at all.
I definitely want to make it weird. It's going to be my first time up at West Point.
You haven't gone? Oh, that's right. You weren't on the show then. Mm-hmm. Me and Cons did the world's worst live show at West Point when we first started.
We were like eight episodes into the show. We're like, sure, we'll do a live show, whatever. We'll do it in the parking lot. A ton of people will come and watch. We had like 20 cadets just standing there. Barely anybody could hear us.
And I think it's just because we had mics out there. People were like,
what's going on here? Let's go. Let's investigate. Yeah, that was bad. So maybe we'll have to redo that one day. But a couple real quick interesting tidbits about Saturday. So, obviously, COVID makes everything wild. They are coming up from Navy in 200 separate buses because they have to socially distance on the buses. So, it's going to take 200 buses to get their entire brigade up to West Point.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, imagine how brutal that ride will be. And then
that cost must be insane.
Well, you wonder why our military budget is outside of this universe, and that's part of the reason is stuff like this.
What? That makes zero sense. Why would you just not say you can't come? 200?
200 buses.
Hopefully that money comes out of, like, alumni fund or some shit like that. That being taxpayer funding is ridiculous.
Yeah, and then right after the game, they got to get back on those 200 buses and turn around and go home.
Town, I go hiking up there, is so small. Where the hell are 200 buses going to wait?
You'll see, Kate, like on our actual on-post, there's plenty of places where they can put 200 buses. But it's just bananas to think about 200 buses. And also, because the president, the current president, not the president-elect, is going to be there as well, the cadets at Mikey, who have a 15-minute walk tops to get from their barracks up to the stadium, have to go up there at 9 a.m. for a 3 o'clock kickoff.
Ooh, and it's cold as a motherfucker this week, too. Mm-hmm. Ooh, those little cadets.
This confirms it. Like, these academies are just fucking stupid. Like, what? 6 hours before and 200 buses?
Yeah, I don't know.
UTSA has smarter leadership than that. Like, we don't. What are you doing?
I don't know.
I'm going to have to smuggle some booze and heaters for him, slide under the fence. Yeah. I don't know what we're going to
do. Oh, man, that would be awesome if pregnant Kate got in trouble for distributing booze to underage cadets.
One other interesting tidbit. For the first time that I've ever known about, Army is going to have a second lieutenant playing in the game because one of our seniors is getting commissioned today that we record Thursday because he's a December graduate. So he's getting commissioned when he graduates today and will be playing the game on Saturday as a second lieutenant.
So you know what they should do?
Hmm.
They should stick him out on the field as like a trick play and let everybody know that it's him, because then technically when the other team's players go by, they have to stop and salute.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's common courtesy.
Yeah, that's how you set the edge.
Yeah, Second Lieutenant Amadeo West. He's actually a starter, so he'll be on the field. So maybe instead of running past him on our defense, they'll just stop and salute him, and then we'll be able to tackle
him. Now, would the rest of the cadets technically have to call him sir at that moment?
Quite honestly, yes. Technically, by the book, they have to say sir. They have to salute him the whole nine. So
that'd be something. Tell him the captain to go fuck himself. And actually, you salute me. How about parade rest, bitch, whenever you're in my huddle?
Yeah.
I love that. I also love what's going down with 2-7 because it's a violent story, right? Is violent okay to describe it as?
Nope, not at all. Okay. Maybe what they're feeling inside is a little violent, but there hopefully no actual violence will come from this. But great way to get people's attention at the start of this round. So this comes to us from James Clark over at Task and Purpose. And this is such a classic military Marine Corps story. The sergeant major of a Marine infantry battalion at 29 Palms, California, the least happy place on earth, is getting absolutely wrecked on social media over claims that the battalion's NCOs will be missing out on holiday leave so they can stand extra duty this month as a form of mass punishment, the NCOs specifically. This story was first surfaced by Marine-centric social media pages like DD214 memes, which these social media pages from they have become the Lance Corporal Underground. Like, they have become, I mean, there's actual news publications getting their news from them because they have the inside baseball on this shit. Anyways, they shared a series of messages with Task and Purpose they claimed came from Marines with 2-7. Based on these accounts, here's what went down. After two Marines allegedly got into a fight over Thanksgiving, the duty roster was changed and the battalion's NCOs were placed on duty for December's block leave, purportedly because of 2-7 Sergeant Major Nathaniel Bradley. So imagine you're a Lance Corporal or an underling or somebody else who has duty over the holiday leave, and all of a sudden you're cleared. You're free as a bird because the NCOs fucked up. They're the ones who have to take it over. It appears the battalion's NCOs were ordered to fill every duty billet over the leave period, from duty NCO to A duty, down to sentries and rovers. These positions are typically divvied up by rank, with Lance Corporals and below, who outnumber NCOs, standing a larger share of the shorter shifts, while one corporal or sergeant at a time might serve as the barracks duty NCO. The abrupt change stoked fears that the unit's corporals and sergeants would inevitably have to stand watch multiple days and would likely have to cancel their vacation plans as a result. On top of that, the battalion recently returned from an overseas deployment just in time for 2 weeks of quarantine because of coronavirus, which means they already lost their post-deployment leave and had it delayed, and now some of them might be getting screwed from holiday leave as well. So you get back from deployment, you get in line, and you just get kicked right in the penis. You're right. Thank you. Or vagina. Mm-hmm. So morale isn't great, and it's showing. They have a series of text messages that say what's going on, and morale is incredibly low. Just about all of us were beside the dudes that just got to this unit. So pretty much, there's this text message conversation where this NCO is saying, like, we're pretty much, if you're an NCO, you're completely fucked for the holiday. These claims were corroborated. The Marine Corps Times went and corroborated them. And the unit's duty rosters indicate that the Marine Corps Times was like, show us your duty rosters, 2-7. And I guess they had to.
Where's that? What FM is that?
Yeah. They indicate that in December, sergeants are standing all the duty NCO positions while the others are primarily being stood by corporals. No non-NCO is standing any of the positions for December. Over the past several days, a flood of memes have appeared on Marine-centric social media pages, which paint a rather unflattering picture of the old battalion sergeant major in particular. The Marine Corps didn't respond to questions about the battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel Barrett Bradstreet, the executive officer, Major Andrew Hornfeck, or Bradley, the sergeant major, and if they would be enjoying their own holiday leave while the NCOs are completely fucked. So
I know this this is going to make Kate upset.
Oh, Jeff, don't do it.
The sergeant major is well within his rights to put any NCO on duty that he wants to. Like, he doesn't have to explain his rationale on why he selected sergeants only. Like, if there's something that was a failure in leadership from the NCO level, I'm fine with this. Like I know that it sucks that you got your leave taken, but also, fuck you. Like, how about that?
All right.
Are you saying that to the 2-7 NCOs?
Yeah, I am. Like, I think that sometimes...
Roast them, daddies and baby girls.
I think sometimes these NCOs, like, if you're the staff NCO and the NCOs have failed, I would really have to see what the failure and leadership was from the NCOs as a whole. Like, if it is, like, they are just hanging out with the Lance Corporals, they're just smoking and joking, they're just hanging out, and there's no differentiation between the two, between NCOs and non-NCOs, then if you want to act like a non-NCO, that's fine. You could do that on Firewatch, bitch. Like, that's entire purpose of it.
This was a response from the Marine Corps. Bottom line is that they introduced a new policy putting NCOs on duty in the barracks due to a number of issues, not just one fight over Thanksgiving. They've had hazing investigations, assaults in the barracks, and IG complaints the past couple months. That's what drove this. But then the message pivots to claim that it's just a misunderstanding. And Bradley informed the battalion staff that staff non-commissioned officers that the Christmas holiday would have a larger duty roster than Thanksgiving. So maybe it's a miscommunication, but
you know,
I don't know.
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. You know, this is really outside
you
my
fucking,
realm. This is outside my realm. I'll let you guys handle this. All I'm going to say is when you have if it's not a one-off incident and you have a problem, and we'll talk about this later at a much more serious level with another story, but when there's a significant issue and it seems because of culture that these things are happening, I think you need to do something a little more significant than just a slap on the wrist to get people in line.
I completely agree. I think should come in. Sergeant Major should come in and be like, I'm being charged with a crime. This is funny. I have a greater responsibility than you could possibly fathom. You weep for Santa Claus and you curse my Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. That Santiago's death, while tragic, probably saves lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. Because places you don't want to talk about at your little holiday party, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like sentry, rover. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to be questioned by a man who rises and falls under the blanket of freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I'd rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Either way, I don't give a damn who is on duty NCO. That's what he should
be. Did you order the duty NCO?
Right.
You're goddamn right I did.
Well, I think that
Court Moose, meeting Article 37.
I have to say,
Santa Claus has rights.
That was pretty good.
That was
off
very
the
good.
Cuff.
No. That was very good. Very impressive.
Very impressive. I say, though, who's making sure the NCOs are in line? This is a failure of leadership all the way up.
That's exactly right. That's what should happen. It's like when Chesty Puller saw the young lieutenant hazing a corporal because he didn't salute him when he walked by, the battalion commander should come by and say, you're absolutely right, Sergeant Major, to put all these NCOs on duty, but you are going to be the staff duty officer of the day for the entire time. So if anything happens, you're the one that comes and takes the report.
Exactly. I think it should be, if NCOs have to do it, I think the staff NCOs should have to be right there with them then.
I completely agree.
And Lance Corporals, go have a ball.
Yeah,
and then,
because Lance
and
Corporals,
furthermore,
they should not be held responsible for shitty leadership. It should be the NCOs, the staff NCOs, and the officers. If something's fucked up, they should be the ones that fix it.
I think the officers there should have to police call the smoke pit.
I'm down with that, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys are going to hate me. I honestly just don't know how duty rosters work over the holidays, just because I was never there. Yikes.
God.
Let's move on to round number two. We're going to bring in Haley Britsky from Task and Purpose. She did a fantastic job of explaining something that is very complicated. I mean, it's complicated to the point where it had a 150-page report. All that's going to be brought to you. This interview is going to be brought to you by our friends at InVets. If you want to get out of the military, we totally understand. And if you do, there is jobs for you in Indiana. They have 80,000 current job openings in Indiana. Go to InVets.org. It's a digital connection point from employers, specifically looking to hire veterans. They work with employers from all different types of industries all across the state of Indiana to open the the hiring process, which can be very complicated, but this is for the veteran and their spouses. InVets Veteran Engagement Team is standing by to work with you, and they're going to give you a free shirt if you just go to invets.org/zero. Create a profile to learn more about the Indiana communities, browse the current job openings in those communities, and receive that free shirt. Yes, you get a free shirt just for signing up. That's invets.org/zero, invets.org/zero. Here's Haley. Now, Zero Blog 30, you've heard us say that we've had her articles constantly from Task and Purpose because she's the Army reporter there, does a fantastic job. We have Haley Britsky on this show to talk about this blockbuster report that didn't it like shut down the entire website? Like, didn't the website crash when they released it?
It essentially, it didn't work the way it was supposed to. I know that much. They were kind of scrambling to get it up. Yeah.
So as a reporter who goes through these types of things, when it's released, did you have any type of like heads up or any pre-publication before it, or did you have to read the 150-page document as fast as you could and get an article up?
Essentially had to read the 150-page document as fast as I could. So luckily I had some of my team members who were able to help me kind of piece through it and pull, you know, important findings and things like that to make it easier. But yeah, we had a heads up that the report was coming, of course. They sent us a few statements ahead of time. And then there was the briefing with the Army Secretary right before we were able to read the report. So kind of helped distill things. But yeah, the report on its own was kind of just up to us.
Yeah, and it was a lot to go over. And one of the things that caught our attention was, because everybody was scrambling to read it, you got to Twitter right away and did this tweet thread that really broke it down Barney style for all of us to like, here's the main bullet points of what's going on. And ultimately, the report found that Fort Hood sexual assault and harassment program, complete mess. So can you go over some of the main things that you saw on the report?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that was a good way to put it. The sexual harassment assault response and prevention program, which is Army-wide, it's an Army-wide program, but at Fort Hood in particular, this civilian panel found that the system was just completely broken, that soldiers didn't feel empowered at all to speak to their leaders. They didn't feel that their allegations of assault and harassment would be taken seriously or kept confidential. They felt they'd be retaliated against, ostracized by their leaders, by their teammates, if they came forward with these problems. And so it really just kind of put on display how much work the Army has to do to make this as in the Army, an environment where sexual assault and harassment survivors can come forward and feel that they'll be heard and taken seriously.
Yeah, because out of the panel, the panel spoke with 507 women and 1,800 soldiers overall. But of those 507 women, 50% said they were not confident in their commanders. Half of all the women that they talked to, and 32% said they wouldn't be comfortable reporting assault or harassment through Fort Hood's SHARP program. And the more you read on, just the more your head sunk. You're like, oh my gosh. But was there anything else that really stood out to you from this report?
I think one of the things that really was sort of a jaw-dropping moment for me was they were explaining during these group interviews that the panel had, they said that there were many instances where when a female soldier spoke up about something they'd experienced, they'd be sort of shut down, talked over by the men in the group and in front of the interviewers. And so it's not even like this is something that is happening behind closed doors. It's happening in front of the people that these soldiers knew were coming to evaluate them. And I think that really distills the environment that these soldiers have found themselves in and sort of the breakdown of norm and policy that they should be able to expect.
And you see throughout the report, one of the results of the report is that so many people were relieved or suspended. There was 14 people that were removed from their positions. Can you kind of talk about the unprecedented nature of that amount of folks being relieved?
Right. So that's exactly what one of my sources told me ahead of this report. They described it as an unprecedented number of people who are going to be let go. We don't see in the Army or in the military really a mass relief or suspension of this size. It really was kind of surprising, but I think it also spoke to the Army's recognition that they needed to put some people out for this. I mean, this has captured the attention of not just the entire military, but the entire country. And they knew the eyes were on them and they were on Fort Hood. That included, those 14 people included Major General Efflant, who was the acting commander at Fort Hood at the time of Vanessa Guillen's death. And it also included the commander of the 3rd Cavalry Regiment, which was the unit that Vanessa was in. And so it really just goes to show, I think, that the Army recognizes how big of a problem this is. And the Army leaders have been saying more now than before, but that, you know, this is kind of the Army's chance to prove just how seriously they take issues like this and really send a message to the rest of the force. And so it really was a surprising number. I was not expecting it to be over 10. I was not expecting it to be in the double digits at all. And so it was a
I would have thought 4 was a lot. Like realistically, yeah. Like from a military's perspective, having 4 would be a ton. And we know like one of the main principles of military leadership is that you don't identify a deficiency without a corrective action. In this 150-page report, they obviously go over a lot of the deficiencies. Have they identified any of the corrective actions that they're going to take?
So they've alluded to some of the areas in which they're going to work to do things. So the report, the panel gave them 70 recommendations for things that they thought they should fix. Not just
that's
in
when
regards
you know you fucked up. If you get 70 recommendations and on how to improve.
Shockingly, right. change your socks and take a Motrin was in there. It was at the bottom. Yeah.
Glow belt. 71. For sure.
Yeah. Glow belts. Absolutely.
Yeah. So they had an extensive list of things that they thought the Army could fix. And right now what's happening is the Army is appointing this people first task force. To kind of go in and see, okay, what is doable? What are the things that we can fix? I believe they have a March 1st deadline to come back to senior Army leaders and say, here's our plan forward, essentially. But they said they would like it sooner if possible. And so we're going to see kind of the changes they make with the SHARP program, also changes with the Criminal Investigation Command's office, which the panel said was, you know, dreadfully under you know, no resources, were not getting the help that they needed, were very understaffed. And so that's also part of what the Army's going to be looking at to make changes to and improve in the coming weeks and months.
Do they suspect that there'll be any glitches, I guess, in the process with a change of executive branch leadership? Like, will that go through the transition or do you think that'll affect it in any way?
It's a great question and something that they haven't really spoken to. Of course, the Army, you know, avoiding that topic right. Like the plague a little bit. But I think that their thinking is that this is such an institutional change and that this report is, you know, hopefully going to be getting the attention of everyone. So even if there is a leadership change, this priority will still stay in place and they will still kind of work through some of these changes. It'll be very interesting to see, you know, if there is new leadership appointed, how that will change either the timeline of things or the priorities. But the Army announced in October that their priority for the entire service was people now, as opposed to readiness or modernization. And so they will have that priority moving forward, no matter who is in the secretary's seat. And so the hope, I'm sure, with Army leadership is that this will be carried out no matter what happens in the next few months.
When another buzzword replaces readiness is the top spot, my God, you know you've got a big
lethality taking a big time back seat.
This also highlighted not just sexual assault, but it highlighted a whole culture on Fort Hood where they're like, well, there's gangs and there's officers afraid of their enlisted and there's all sorts of things
which
going
I liked
on there.
I liked that
yeah
aspect.
We liked that aspect but no, but there was a lot more going on too. You have a close connection with the Army there. Do you know, with all these people being, with the 14 being let go or suspended, what's the morale like there? What's the general vibe from the boots on the ground?
Yeah, so it's kind of a mixed response. You know, speaking to soldiers there over the last few months, I was covering the Vanessa Guillen case, there was just this very prevalent attitude that this was just so deeply ingrained in the Fort Hood culture, that these problems were, it would take more than just you know, one or two commanders being let go. So with this 14, I think there, of course, is some cynicism that, you know, that's not going to change anything. Like, just 14 people, there still needs to be more action taken. But I think some are a little hesitantly optimistic that maybe because of the attention this report has gotten, that the Army is not going to, you know, drop this bone anytime soon, and that they're going to really try to fix things. But of course, it's going to be something that we, as you know, the reporters covering it, will have to hold the Army to account and see, are they actually making real changes in response to this? Or is it more of, you know, we'll study this and then 3 years later, there's not really a lot of action being taken.
Right. And I think you were right about saying, you know, well, it was a huge wake up call for everyone. And you had another tweet about a December 8th interview with CBS Evening News, where Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy tells interviewer Nora O'Donnell that he was surprised by the number of individuals who feared retaliation from reporting sexual assault and harassment. And right away, you posted kind of like an eye roll thing to it. And that was my immediate reaction too. How out of touch must the leadership be with what it's really like for women and men going through it in the military? So I hope that just not just at Fort Hood, but across the board, are you seeing other bases now starting to make announcements too, that they're looking into it or anything like that?
I know that commanders have been all told by Army leaders to read this report in its entirety. I know that Sergeant Major of the Army, Michael Grinston, was particularly furious about this because of how often it mentioned NCOs and NCOs being the problem in so many of these instances. And he took that very personally. And so I know that this is something the Army leadership is acknowledging as, yes, it's particularly bad at Fort Hood, but many of these problems are throughout the Army and throughout the military. And so how are we going to fix this for the rest of the force and not just Fort Hood? They, of course, don't have the in-depth reports, you know, that we saw with Fort Hood at every installation. But it is something that I know that they're looking at. The SHARP program, any changes that are made there will be made Army-wide. It won't just be Fort Hood. So things like that will hopefully help the rest. But I mean, you're exactly right. There's this sense of surprise among the senior leaders. That's a bit frustrating to see because, you know, as someone,
and do you think that's genuine? There's no way it's genuine, right? Like, you can't be around the military this long and that's really what you think is going on. You have to know, like, if not, you are brain dead.
It kind of is this, the way that I have seen it anyway is, and I tweeted this as well, was, you know, if you're surprised by this, there has been extensive reporting on people feeling this way on this problem. If this is really shocking to you, that tells me you either A, don't care to read those stories of those soldiers, or B, just don't believe them. And so I think it really is a moment for the Army to be very reflective of the things that they are prioritizing, of the way that they're going about things.
And I one thing I want to ask you, because you did a great job of telling us what happened, but I know that you are a passionate person in general. How long did it take you to get the bearing whenever you're sitting here in one of these briefings to not be have a readable face? Like, this is, you don't know? Like, this is bullshit. How can you not know? And maintaining like some type of non-biased journalistic approach.
Sometimes I still think I don't have the best straight face in those moments. I've definitely been working on that. I think there's a clip out there somewhere of my colleague asking something about Afghanistan during a briefing, and I started laughing because it was just ridiculous. So I'm still working on that, I think. But no, I mean, it's frustrating. It's frustrating as someone who has spoken so extensively to soldiers who have dealt with this issue, who have been assaulted or harassed and haven't been believed. And just as a human being who knows these stories are out there, who knows how many soldiers are going through this, and to hear leadership, say things like, well, we're working on this, when you have 10 people in your email inbox who are seeing something totally different. It's frustrating and it's disappointing. And I want to be optimistic that this is a turning point. I'd like to believe, until I have a reason not to, that leadership is really taking this seriously. But it's something that we'll be watching really closely.
And the final question for me, I feel like in large part, the only reason that it's gotten to this point, that this report, that there was even a panel and this report was released, is because the family of Vanessa Guillen refused to be silenced. They refused to be silenced until they found her, and then they refused to be silenced until they knew there was action being taken. Have they had anything to say about this new report coming out yet or anything like that? Because I know they're still really heavily involved in, and the I Am Vanessa Guillen movement has been absolutely huge. Have you heard anything from them?
I haven't heard anything from the family yet. I know that the Army spoke with them. General McConville, the chief of staff, said on Tuesday that he spoke with Vanessa's mother before the briefing. So I'm sure that they have told them, you know, what the findings are. The family, you're right, has been very vocal about wanting to see real change. I mean, Vanessa's sister told me just a few months ago when we spoke that was, you know, really all that they wanted to be seeing moving forward, whether that was in Congress with the I Am Vanessa Guillen bill or just in the Army and the policies that they have. One of the biggest things I think has been the Army announcing that they have this new guidance for missing soldiers, essentially putting more pressure on commanders to immediately take this seriously, immediately look for them, the things they need to be doing. Because that was something that wasn't taken seriously enough.
Which is insane. Like, that's insane. I mean, there's so many tweets about if you lose a pair of night vision goggles, you'll be out for 72 hours looking for it. And they didn't look for Vanessa for longer than 24. Like, that is so crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely an attitude. That's something I heard from soldiers as well, was like, you know, one soldier active duty down at Fort Hood told me, you know, people go missing a lot and it's kind of weird. And I wanted to be like, yeah, it is. That's weird.
For sure.
You're right. And yeah, and it's something that, you know, when the Army said, well, we're putting out new policy to say when a soldier doesn't report for duty, they're considered missing. It was kind of that moment of, what have you been considering them? if the new guidance is saying that, what has been the norm? So there are just so many steps that need to be taken and that the Army is taking now to fix what has happened there. And it'll be interesting to see what actually is implemented.
But not on the pessimistic front, I do think it is encouraging that the general reached out to Vanessa Guillen's family directly, because in a lot of ways, like, you could see people pushing that off on somebody else, but being direct and having to make those phone calls to a family member of somebody with a story like Vanessa, that's not easy to do, like, at all. And so to go directly, hopefully that's a sign that we are taking this seriously and we're going to do what we can.
Yeah. Definitely.
Hopefully that's a wake up call for him too, to never have to do that again.
Yeah.
Never to fix it. But yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Haley. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you, Haley,
for having me. Thanks.
Thanks again to Haley for coming on the show. She did great. I can't imagine being in a job like hers where you actually have to do research. Like, that would be different for us. We don't normally do that. We just kind of.
Yeah, it's important to be accurate when you're in Haley's position, which we are grateful for. Thank you, Haley.
Yes.
Seriously.
And again, reading that report wasn't eye-opening. It was just a bummer, dude. It was just like, get your it's 2020, come on, military, you can do it.
Well,
if you can
you know, you're right, that's the worst part, Kate. It wasn't eye-opening. I didn't see anything or read anything to where I was just appalled or taken aback, that I was just so shocked that I was hearing all this. It was just the first time it was in a very extensive report put down on paper, and you and I were talking about it yesterday. This isn't unique to the Army either. I think there is a cultural problem throughout the military. I think that is brought about in large part because of the lack of diversity in the military and the lack of gender diversity in the military. So this is a bigger problem for the military at large. So although this came out from Fort Hood specifically, the Army as a whole needs to look at this report and analyze what's going on at their units and their installations. And I think every other branch should take a very hard look at this report and say, wait a second, let's take a step back, because probably every other unit in some way or another needs to improve how they treat everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that there is enough, like, there is diversity. I think where we need to really focus on diversity is diversity in high levels of leadership. Like, for instance, when the new Air Force Chief of Staff came on board, he started talking about why Black Lives Matter is important, even as a military
like looking at it from a military perspective, because he's a black man, it hits a little bit different than mm-hmm. if a normal 60-year-old white dude is talking about the importance of inclusion. Whenever you have somebody who's been through that struggle that is walking there, same thing with the new chief sergeant major of the Air Force, whatever the fuck her rank and title actually is. So she's talking, when she's talking about issues of women equality in the military, you know, it hits a little bit different because she has that personal experience. Personal experience is important to hear, like how we move forward. I think we need to have a lot more diversity in leadership, which is one of the reasons why I'm excited for Joe Biden's new appointment to Secretary of Defense. Having the first black man as the Secretary of Defense, I think, is a big step. And I think that that is the way that you could see changes, like that push them through, have a little bit more diversity in thought. And I think that that's going to be beneficial for the entire military.
Well, there was just a story out of the Air Force. Speaking of, you're talking about the Air Force's top woman. There was just a story where an airman stationed in Japan, she was so desperate to get away from her stalker and her harasser, and her command wasn't doing anything about it. I'm trying to find her right now on my Instagram. I started following her. She's been posting updates. She took to Instagram finally and was like, somebody help me. Mm-hmm. Public, please, somebody help me, because no one here is listening to me at all. Nothing's being done. And she detailed and had recorded accounts of her higher ups, like, just disregarding her and not mm-hmm. taking it seriously. It wasn't until the end, when he almost like rammed her car in a parking lot, that they finally were like, oh, you're like telling the truth and stuff. Like, it's a crazy story. And then finally it was the, what do you call the commander of the Air Force? I'm getting it wrong.
The chief mass sergeant of the Air Force.
It finally reached her, and she was the one who facilitated a move for this airman to finally get the fuck out of there after months of begging.
Yeah, because she went onto the Instagram and she commented, like, reach out to me, reach out to my office and see. And you know, like, in her position, when you're in charge of, like, you're the senior enlisted advisor for the entire branch, so many other high-level NCOs, staff NCOs are going to see that and be like, oh, fuck. Like, once she's involved and she is taking something that should have definitely been on your radar, you are fucked at that point, and you know it, and you have to act.
And reading about the culture, like, it's across all branches. So many of the comments on that, and you click their little profiles, it's airmen being like, whatever, you just want to go get stationed with your husband, you just want attention, you just want this, you just want that, and people just blatantly still disregarding her, despite her, like, laying out the facts so clearly and what's going on so clearly, still just being talked over, disbelieved, whatever. And that's a problem still clearly across the board. The final thing I'll say, Haley highlighted these two things in a tweet. She did these two tweets. So numerous women told the panel that there's a daily battle to get through the day without allowing the multiple advances from male soldiers upset them. They explained that male soldiers routinely, openly, aggressively, and relentlessly approach female soldiers. When the soldiers explain this to leaders, they say they don't have any way to stop that kind of behavior, the panel wrote. So women are saying, our leaders are telling us there's nothing I can do. When the panel told a senior installation leader about this at Fort Hood, the leader responded to the panel members, what can I do about it? So, I mean, that just goes to show you, fix it. If you're a leader out there and that's what you're thinking in your head too when it happens, God damn it, fix yourself.
How
I'm nice handing
my
the screen.
Fault? What did I do?
Yo, take some ownership. And that was the, you know, the other thing. A few things that really stuck out to me, that the fact that all these investigations prior to this were going on within the unit, and they said the leaders were at such an impasse because on the one hand, they want to do the right thing and address the problem that's happening, but on the other hand, they don't want to admit that something under their command could be wrong. So they kind of do, you know, kind of paint by numbers, just kind of run through the motions and don't do an extensive investigation, and that just leads to the problem not being eradicated. So,
and we've talked about that before. Like, it's ridiculous to put some second or first lieutenant in charge of an investigation who, one, has zero experience doing any type of investigation like that. You have some 23, 24-year-old dickhead that doesn't know shit about anything. And they go and do, they're the ones that's in charge of the investigation. It's insane that that's the process.
I told you, I've said it on the show before, I was in charge of a murder investigation. They're just like, hey.
It's so stupid. Here, I love here, you, Cons, but you're not equipped for that.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not. And I had this liaison.
You've listened to Serial with the best of them, but you don't know.
No, yeah, I don't know what to ask. I don't know what to look for. I had this officer, at this major at JAG, who was reviewing my reports, but that was the extent of my guidance that I was given. He's like, just go interview everybody and ask them questions. So and he didn't give me any sort of idea of
so
what sort
you
of
guys
questions?
Like you guys like football?
Yeah, it was crazy. And
where
then,
did the suspect allegedly go to school? That's all I need to know. Yeah. That's all yeah. I need to know.
The last thing I'll say that was disturbing to me was how when they did the independent investigation way back in the summer, and they came to the conclusion that the standards were met of the SHARP program, whatever. When it comes to sexual harassment, in my opinion, meeting the standard is not enough. You need to exceed what you're supposed to be doing and fostering an environment where people feel comfortable, because clearly they didn't continue to feel comfortable. So the standard was not enough in this scenario.
Yeah, there should be an immediate almost recusal of anybody from in that chain of command, even within the same battalion, base, or whatever. It should always be a non-partial person that has to investigate any of those stuff. And I would say not even inside the same branch. I mean, it would be nice to have cross branches or just like a civilian sector that do that type of thing. What we're doing now just not going to work.
I think that's ultimately why we had this report and why it was accurate and why we finally got some conclusions was because it was a civilian investigation. So they don't come at it through the military lens. They don't even come through it through the Army lens. They just come through it like, wait, this is what's going on. This can't be what happens. So,
yep. No doubt about it. All right, we're going to move on to something a little bit more positive, and we're going to do that with our good friends at 3Chi because they are the industry leader in hemp derived cannabis products. They are all formulated by a biochemist. They feature Delta 8, which effects of a hybrid of CBD and Delta 9, giving it a similar buzz and all the medicinal effects of Delta 9 without the laziness, anxiety, paranoia, and mental fogginess. My mom is a big believer. She has RA and has had struggles sleeping for a long period of time. She tried 3Chi when she came to my house. She said she's been sleeping fantastically, really enjoys it, just doesn't wake up in the middle of the night. In fact, her husband has to wake her up sometimes in the morning because she's getting such solid sleep. Good for my mama. It's been a long time for her. Shout out to 3Chi for helping her achieve that. You can achieve your own restful night's sleep by going to 3Chi.com. Enter the promo code ZBT at checkout. Receive 5% off your product. They have this new one called London Pound Cake. Right, Kate?
It's everybody. I don't know if I can take it right now, chaps, but yes, they certainly do. It's
they
supposed
do.
To be
I'm
delicious.
Just making sure you knew that they had it. I knew you hadn't done it since you're pregnant. That would be weird. But go
to 3chi.com.
Enter the promo code ZBT. You're going to get 5% off your first order there. It's a great deal. Make sure you check it out. All right. So this one is a little bit quiet time, right, Kate? There's a little bit of a quiet section in the United States that's getting fucked with. And it is not the area in between San Antonio and El Paso, surprisingly, where absolutely nothing happens.
Yeah, no, it's an even quieter. Everybody, just settle into your little chairs. Get nice and calm and quiet. We're doing a little AMSR quiet round here for round number 3. Let me tap my nails on the mic. Okay, here we go. Nearly 3,000 hours of recorded audio in Washington's Olympic Peninsula, home to what used to be the...
I think you turned your mic off, actually.
Are you serious?
That sounds
tap
like...
it.
Tap, tap, tap.
No, it's back.
No, it's good. Yeah.
Oh, I got too quiet. So this comes to us from Katie Camaro at the News Tribune. Quiet little story. Nearly 3,000 hours of recorded audio in Washington's Olympic Peninsula, home to what used to be the quietest place in the United States, reveal the tantalizing and even harmful activity behind the stripping of the region's hushed beauty. Military aircraft flying out of U.S. Navy Base Whidbey Island in Puget Sound, north of Seattle, has contributed to 88% of all audible flying noise, causing the most noise pollution over the entire peninsula, widely known for its deafening silence. You know why it's so quiet up there?
Why?
Have you ever hugged a Northwest tree?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are... I went up to the Redwoods and like went on this big road trip up through there.
They're cozy?
Oh, they are... You just want to snuggle up. They're like the bark is this soft and it's covered in this like soft moss, and you can just, they're like absolute sound absorbers, man. It's wild. Walking through the forest, you are legit like, where the fuck's the noise? Like, you don't hear a single thing. It freaks you out a little bit.
You should record podcasts up there. That'd be a great place to do it.
It really will. It really would. It just absorbs sound. So
I do like the idea of like all these like these animals just sitting there, like a beaver just chilling in like this creek, and all of a sudden a plane goes by and his head pops up from eating some sticks. He's like, "What the heck?
What the hell? What the fuck? Huh?
What's that?
What?
Huh?
What's that?
What the heck? Whoa.
What the heck?
There's a drone in my neighborhood. What the heck?
Who allowed what? That?
He goes on Nextdoor.com. Did anybody else hear that? That drone? Anyways,
helicopter.
Yeah, researchers from the university. I'm going to stop this now. Researchers from the University of Washington, don't you dare, found that aircraft can be heard zooming across the sky for at least 20% of for at least 20% of weekday hours, or for 1 hour during a 6-hour period. Most of the recorded noise could be compared to like busy office setting hum, household fridge, but at times it can reach city traffic or leaf blower levels, and levels high enough that could cause hearing damage after 2 hours of exposure. The sporadic whooshes.
That's loud. Like, what are they doing?
Well, we'll get into it in a second here. The sporadic whooshes of aircraft can also cause other harmful consequences for humans and wildlife, like difficulty sleeping, problems finding food. What's more, pets' heads falling off. What's more, the Navy is planning to switch to a more powerful aircraft and increase air activities by 75% over the Olympic Peninsula. 8 American Indian tribes and more than 2 dozen animal species, many of which are threatened and endangered, call the peninsula home. More than 3 million visitors visit Olympic National Park 2, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The team from UW School of Aquatic and Fishery Sciences planted audio recorders at several locations around the world, one of the world's most quiet rainforests up there in the U.S., and noise was recorded for 10 consecutive days for 4 different seasonal periods, and then volunteers listened to nearly 3,000 hours of audio.
How do you listen to all that and not like fall asleep?
That's a terrible job.
Yeah.
Yeah. The study revealed 5,800 flights. 88% belonged to military. Most noise happened between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. And it was most coming from growlers and Boeing E-818 jets used for electronic warfare.
Imagine you're some beaver just trying to go to work every day, you know, down there at the river building your dams. And it's just like, God damn these planes. When will they stop?
Language con.
Sorry.
I know.
Sorry.
Well, the noise was between 45 and 60 decibels, which, again, comparable to air traffic sounds, but sometimes it reached up to 80. Center for Disease Control says 80 to 85 decibels can cause damage to hearing after 2 hours of exposure, while at 95 decibels, like a motorcycle engine, 50 minutes will do you. Well, can fuck you up a little bit. Thus, all the hearing tests in the military. I went down this other rabbit hole I didn't include in here about military noises and how fucked we all are. Mm. But it's no surprise that there's a studies that shows that military people are like the most fucked hearing wise.
Yeah, I used to think that because when I was an instructor at the schoolhouse here for K-9, the dogs, shockingly, they all bark really loud. So when you have hundreds of them in the same concrete building, it gets loud. And we used to have to hand the students ear protection whenever they went in. They would always have to wear earplugs whenever they go into the kennels just because it was loud as shit. But the instructors, we never did because we had to be able to hear if, like, oh, I don't know, a student was screaming because they were getting attacked by a dog. So we weren't allowed to. But there'd be some days where I would walk out of there like, fuck, man, my head is ringing from being in there for so long.
Oh, you probably – I totally believe you could get hearing loss from the kennels. It's like nightmarishly loud in there. It's crazy.
but also one of the things I want to point out, people forget America has rainforest.
Yes. They think they're all down in South America. But they're, they're not. But they're not.
We have our own. We have our own. Chumps, one time I was firing a 50 cal for training and my earplugs fell out. Oh. And I didn't want to look like a little bitch, so I just kept going. And to this day, when birds chirp or the news is on, I can physically I hear it, but I can physically also just feel like a thump, 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 thump to the news anchors and birds. And that was
there's nothing.
That feeling when you're doing firing and you forget your hearing protection and you just keep going, or you don't realize, like, wow, that's really loud. Like, maybe I should have my hearing protection in. There was times where I would do ranges and leave it out, And it would take days, legitimately, for your ears to stop ringing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worse even is if you get surprised. You're just walking
somewhere. Oh, and your job, too, artillery. I imagine that's pretty loud.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, there were times where I just didn't know there was a fire mission going, and next thing you know, there's a howitzer being fired, and you don't have any ear protection in, and you're way too close to that thing.
It's not like on Call of Duty when you throw a flashbang and then walk into it.
No.
And you just, like, this screen just goes into different places. It sticks around for a lot longer.
Not quite.
You just take a knee and it goes away.
Yeah.
And now, all that being said about how noise is annoying, I'm about to shit on the residents of the peninsula a little bit here.
Are they being pussies?
Yeah, but and dicks that are weak.
True. Testicles.
Mm-hmm. Soft ones. Mm-hmm. The researchers said that conversations with residents in the Olympic Peninsula revealed a majority who noticed the Leverjet noise. The chronic and unpredictable nature of the noise is tiresome. They report difficulty sleeping and interference with hearing aids. Difficulty sleeping, it's mostly between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. And honey, try living next to the W train, okay? Mm-hmm. You got problems. That thing runs 24 hours a day. It shakes my lamps, and my window is right next to my pillow.
And interfering with your hearing aids? Okay, no one cares, you deaf fuck. Like, you're already deaf.
That's a little cruel and mean, but
that's
okay.
That's a little much. That's
okay,
a little extra.
I'll take that back. I was just throwing it out there, see if it stuck.
But they do say it's like very, very fragile wildlife up there. And they do say it does mess up. It triggers stress that affects the ability to reproduce and communicate with other animals and find prey for the little critters up there. The researchers say they hope to convince the Navy to consider moving its aircraft training to other bases. Good luck with that.
Yeah, did that say anything about impotence?
No, it didn't. So,
all right. Well, if you are feeling that, maybe you should go with Roman swipes because they are clinically proven way to make you last longer in bed or in the rainforest, too. I would imagine they still work on the rainforest. They're effective, easy to use, and fast acting and don't require a prescription. Roman can send swipes to you in a discreet, unmarked package. And each swipe packet is small enough to hide in your little wallet or wherever you need it, in your pocketbook. If you just want to put that in there, set it down, take it out, swipe it on, dance, and then fuck. They're super easy to use. Just take the swipes out of the pocket. That was ridiculous. Swipe it on, let it drive, and you're good to go. That's it. Go to GetRoman.com/zero. You can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. That's GetRoman.com/zero. Now we're going to move into a little bit of an interview that Cons did with Napoleon, which is, I would say, if you were power ranking power names, Napoleon might be at the top of the list.
Yeah, it's up there for sure. Absolutely.
Napoleon. Way up there.
Yeah.
But you can't be little and be Napoleon. Like, not anymore.
No, that's a good
point. Even though Napoleon
was
small. Now, to be a Napoleon, you got to be like, I'd say 6'3".
Mm-hmm. Just flip that name on its head.
He was an athlete, so it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
He was
pretty good, too.
He was handsome, too. He was a very handsome
Very fella. Handsome, yeah.
Here's that interview with Cons.
All right, now on Zero Block 30, very special guest. This gentleman graduated from the Naval Academy in 1985, and please bear with me, because he's got a lot of accolades here. He was a two-time All-American. He had over 7,000 career all-purpose yards, almost 4,200 career yards rushing, which was a Navy record until that was broken in 2015. Finished seventh in the Heisman his final year. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, played 6 years in the NFL, and found himself in the College Football Hall of Fame in 2003. Mr. Napoleon McCallum, how are you doing, sir, and welcome.
Great. Thanks for having me today.
I appreciate it. You know, it's interesting. I think – so many great players have played in the Army-Navy game, but very few transcend the game and cross over multiple decades. And I think you're one of those gentlemen who transcends the rivalry. So it's a treat for me to speak with you today.
Well, thanks.
So quickly, how did you end up at Navy when seemingly you could have went a lot of other places?
Well, I wanted to be a pilot. And at the time, the best pilots were Navy pilots. And I wanted to eventually go into the astronaut program. So I was thinking that what better way to go through to do that than through the Navy. And one of my miscalculations was that you have to fly over water. And so you have to do all this water training. And I'm not a good swimmer. So the whole time I was at the Naval Academy, I was in swimming sub squad. So that's how I ended up there. Okay. Plus, I wanted to be a running back. A lot of the other places wanted me to play defensive back.
Okay. And then, so obviously you were very accomplished. What was life like as a star athlete at the Naval Academy?
You know, kind of like every other cadet or midshipman, you know, I'm getting yelled at my freshman year for not knowing my rates, running around screaming, go Navy, beat Army. You know, and then the academics, you know, extremely hard, not getting to go out on town, you know, that much, weekends, it was really tough. It was great experience, something that, you know, I'm glad I went through for the 4.5 years I was there. Great character building. Learned so many things. Learned so much about myself and other people. So it was just a great experience that's helped me through my life.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, directly right after graduation, you took a little bit of a uncharacteristic path of what a Naval Academy graduate would do. And you overlapped a little bit with David Robinson. So you guys kind of maybe going through this at similar times, but you ended up playing professional football. How did that work out for you that you were able to go do that while also doing your service to the Navy?
So my first year, I ended up getting stationed in Long Beach, California. And I was on an amphibious assault ship that had just gone into dry dock. So when your ship's in dry dock, you kind of have regular hours. And so what I did, I was an assistant food service officer. So I would go in, do the morning and lunch meals, and then I would leave, and then I would go off to the Raiders, go to part of their practice, and then stay afterwards to watch film with one of the coaches. Every 4 days, go back to the ship, stand duty and watches. And the break that they gave me was they let me off on weekends.
Oh, okay. That was nice. Cause I mean, so you could be there for, you know, for the kind of the most important day of the week, the game. So I could understand why that was good. Yeah. So,
And we had Marcus Allen. Marcus Allen was the running back then, so I was basically his backup and did a lot of the special team stuff.
And I mean, you had a very nice career, and I'm sure Mr. Davis, who's obviously since passed, was very proud to have you on the team as a Naval Academy graduate and a Naval officer.
Yeah, he had some military. He coached at a military school. I forget which school it was, but one of his first head coaching jobs was at a military college.
Okay. Well, you unfortunately, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to bring up bad memories. You had a very gruesome injury that is very well known in football history, and I'm very sorry that happened to you. But I'd imagine you were able to then lean on your education that you received at the Naval Academy. And what did you find yourself doing after football?
Well, after football, I was real good in computers, and I started a company called Digital Pro Graphics, where we did computer graphics, wrapped buses, did a lot of large signage, and I did that in Las Vegas. And so that's how I got out to Las Vegas, started that company, did it for about 10 years, and got into something else. Like currently I am the director of community development for the Las Vegas Sands Corporation, which is, we own the Venetian and Palazzo hotels here and a lot of hotels in China and Singapore.
And did I read correctly that you had somewhat of a hand in bringing the Raiders to Vegas?
Yeah, it was just, I'd been here 20 years and everybody I talk to, when they see me, they talk about football, and they just talked about how, you know, for Las Vegas to be a legitimate city, we need a professional team here. And we had done real well with the XFL, and it was just one of those things that it was just a perfect timing that the Raiders were looking for a place to go. I knew Las Vegas wanted a team, and so we just put the two together.
I mean, that's awesome. I think it's going very well. I think it's great for the city, and I think it's going to bode well for the NFL as a whole. So I think that's excellent that you've got involved in that. Now, Saturday, very big game, Army-Navy. Yeah. You played in, you had a nice record against Army. I will begrudgingly admit that. You had a very nice record, some nice stats. But as I mentioned, you are one of these guys that kind of is as big as the rivalry gets, a name that everybody at both schools really knows. Do you feel any sort of added responsibility to the rivalry as a person like that?
I never thought of myself as that. Last year when I went to the game and I walked around the stadium, even when I went on to the Army side, a lot of people knew me. I was really shocked at how many Army people knew me and knew of me. And it was real touching, mm-hmm. So I feel great about it. And I know there's a little added obligation to encourage this rivalry and keep it going strong.
Yeah, no, and speaking about, going strong, what did you think about the rivalry kind of, unfortunately, when I was playing in the 2000s, when it really wasn't that even? I mean, years past when you were there, the 80s, 90s, it seemingly kind of went back and forth, never more than a few years with one team winning. What did you think about the rivalry back then in the 2000s?
I love that we were winning, but I did want it to be close. I like the ideal of the battle, mm-hmm. and struggling and not knowing who's going to win. And so I'm glad that the Army program has picked up. They're doing really, really well. And it's going to be a battle for us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you guys are favorite this year. And so last year, you didn't know who was going to win.
Right.
And Navy ended up winning that game. And so, the last several years, it's been really exciting to watch the game. I mean, you don't know who's going to win. And so mm-hmm. that's what makes it such a great game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it makes my stomach turn sometimes, though. But specifically about this year, how do you feel about the game being played up at Mikey Stadium?
I kind of wish I would have had an opportunity to go there. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to see what West Point was. I never took a visit out to West Point, so that's just one of the things I'm going to have to do before I put it on my bucket list to go.
All right. Well, you mentioned my name. I know some people up there. I know a lot of people. I can take care of you. And okay. I'm sure if I mention your name, we won't have a problem getting you some access. Just a couple more questions here, and then I'll let you go. I know you got a lot to do today. Yeah. What is it about the Army-Navy rivalry that makes it different in your eyes that people across college football can't fully understand without having played in it?
This rivalry starts at the very beginning. When you go to either academy, you are screaming, go Navy, beat Army, or beat Navy, go Army. I don't know how you guys do it. But, I mean, it's every day you're hearing everybody talk about this, and there's such a big buildup throughout the year for that game, that Army-Navy football game. And so everybody's psyched up for it. For us, if you've had a losing season, you win the Army game, Army-Navy game, your season is automatically better.
Mm-hmm.
That game, everybody plays harder. Everybody hits harder. They play tougher, for those seniors. It's their last football game ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so, all that coming together, that's what makes that game so big. And, having the cadets and the midshipmen all there and the supporting military there, even the president comes there, mm-hmm. So that's – the game is so huge.
Yes.
And it's just played with people of great character.
Absolutely. I would agree. All right, last question here, and then I'll let you get out of here. As I mentioned, you had a nice record against Army, but you had an opportunity to play the single game in the Rose Bowl, the Army-Navy game that was played in the Rose Bowl, if I read correctly. But what is your greatest memory from this rivalry?
Oh boy, you mentioned the Rose Bowl. So we knew that Army was going to kick the ball to me, and they were going to have everybody tackle me, you know. And so we ran a reverse on the first play, and so she's half the Army Navy team was on me. I hand it off to Eric Wallace, and we go for the touchdown. And we kind of, we just deflated Army there. So we ended up killing them in that game and stuff. So, but that was a great memory. I think my last year being carried off the field, that was an awesome memory too. So, I have some great fond memories, Army Navy game.
All right. All right. Any prediction for Saturday?
Navy by 3 points.
All right, you heard it from him. Navy by 3 points, even though he is Napoleon McCallum, he is susceptible to being wrong, which I believe he is. All right, sir, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. And as I said, all right, anytime you want to come up to Mikey, I'm happy to host you.
Okay, thanks.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, last round of the day, we took to the social media, to ZBT social media, because there's a certain little, I guess it's a format of tweets that have been going around lately, and so we wanted to chime in on that as well. Kate, what happened there?
Yeah, so there's this trend of, like, tell me you went to West Point without directly saying it. And so, Cons, what's something you would say to that? I'm a douchebag.
There you go.
you know what I mean?
I was sitting here thinking of something witty, but yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I would just start walking around with my Oster voice.
So Kyle put up on the ZBT Twitter, tell me you're in the military without telling me you're in the military. And so some of the answers we'll read off here were pretty great. Wearing a camelback around town. That's a good way to let somebody know.
Okay, you got to include that last word. I know that you don't like to because that's a very boot word. Wearing a camelback on Libbo.
Like Kate Barstool, he also added.
You Lucy. Do. You wear a Coleman Cooler backpack. That's kind of like a little bit of a camelback extension.
I'm having trouble with it right now. We had bagels at the office on Monday, and I asked Avery to steal an everything bagel because I wasn't there and hide it for me, and he did. Then I hid it in my backpack, and now my whole backpack and everything smells like garlic and onions. It's troubling. Anyways, Lucky Prack said, all my shoes are laced left over right. No one has or will ever check, but if they do, they are. And that's in the is that every branch? Is that Army too? You got to lace them left over right?
I never got told how to tie my shoes. No.
We break everything down.
Jace 5 said, telling somebody that I got in trouble once for having trash in my trash can.
That happens in the Army too.
Yeah, in the military on field day, if you have trash in your trash can, you are wrong. At a mob of ducks said, if our appointment is at 4, we need to get there by 3:50.
That guy's definitely in the Air Force.
I was going to say 3:30 or 3 o'clock or 2:30.
10 minutes prior. What is this?
I was shocked by that. This one, Dongcopter, great name, said, yeah, I've been in the airport once while I was on my way overseas to the Middle East.
That's true.
So I think the Middle East part kind of gives away, but saying, like, you've been to almost every airport ever. Because when you're in, you're always like, oh, yeah, I was in Ireland once. Well, just on my way to the Middle East, but just for a layover. Like, you've had layovers everywhere. Mm-hmm. Conley Purier says, my sand raking skills are second to none. You definitely do a lot of unnecessary raking and, like,
one of my buddies, he was stationed in, I think it was in Bahariya whenever he was in Iraq and we were there at the same time. And he would always get into, like, the shortest silkies, like the green silkies that he could, and then roll them up where they're almost like briefs and go into the front of, like, their kennel area and without a shirt, just those greens on, and then, like, his shower shoes. And he would rake it like it was his Zen garden every morning. And so he said that he would go out and, like, the sergeant major that was in charge of the base would do, like, he would go on a walk every morning just to check out the camp and everything. And he'd be out there raking and be like, morning, sergeant major. Like, good morning, Marine. Like, whenever he would go by, just like it was a normal part of life. But he said it really did help him, like, making it like his own little Zen garden. Like, he did the swirls and did everything. Some of his pictures were incredible.
Oh, I believe it.
This next one's the best.
Well, I'm going. You go ahead and read it, Con.
Okay, this one's from Nasty. It just says, "I'm dead inside."
Yeah, that'll do it. Nate Wolf said, gonna lace up my Go Fasters and just run for a little fun and run just for fun. So yeah, Go Fasters. John Boland said, if he had to describe it to someone without directly saying it, I sit in a building that I don't even live in for 24 hours at least once a month to make sure nothing goofy happens.
Yeah,
yeah, that's duty. A lot of people in 2-7 know that one. At tweet of Jake, I got bit by a brown recluse spider and was told to take a Motrin for it. Inadequate field medical care is a good way to tell someone you're in the military. Christopher Ford said, I shudder when someone calls me sir. William Hoyle said, cracking joints, bad credit in my second marriage. Absolutely. If you're divorced, there's like a 90% chance you're in the military, right?
We have Lacey Evans on. I've already done that interview next week. She talks about she got married at 19 years old to a civilian husband that she had before she joined the Marine Corps, and they're still married.
Whoa. Wow.
I know.
Bucking the trend there.
Like, that is legitimately shocking.
Looks like we made it.
I know. What an accomplishment there.
We've got. And then finally, Anthony Luciano said, as a 20-year-old, I know everything there is to know about U.S. foreign policy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The smoke pit foreign policy that often leads to Twitter.
Damn. So
as a Marine.
That Libya, I just don't know.
I had just two really quickly. One, in answer to your earlier question, Kate, how do you tell someone you went to West Point without actually telling to West Point? Trick statement, we would just tell you we went to West Point. We would work it into the conversation somehow. And then also the other week when I just very openly and freely just accepted that I was going to sit outside in line for 6 hours to get a COVID test and didn't bat an eye at it.
Yeah, that'll do it too. But this question got, it's almost at 200 responses right now. Head on over and give a follow to the @ZeroBlog30 Twitter and put your own answer in there. People are really liking and having fun with it. Ton of different answers there. And yeah, I do like my Coleman Cooler backpack, and I do have a Camelback that
what
I wear
do you think
sometimes.
If you could, one boot thing that you absolutely love and you're not ashamed of it?
One boot thing.
I love that I have my phone on 24-hour military time.
I love my green-on-green sweats. I was just wearing last night at the office, I was just wearing my green Marine Corps sweatshirt, which I love that I used to be afraid to wear that stuff after I got out because I didn't want people to be like, oh, okay, boot, you wearing your dumb military stuff after you got out of the military? But now, especially as a pregnant, it's visibly pregnant, I love wearing my Marine Corps sweatshirt looking
They're
like
so
a dirt.
Soft.
Yeah, it's so soft. It's the comfiest fucking thing.
That was my
on the
favorite
planet.
Uniform just to be like, if you're just chilling in the house, I would love to take off my boots and boot bands, take off your boots, still have your trousers on, and then have your green sweatshirt over the top, like boots and utes, but with a sweatshirt. And just sitting with your feet up on the coffee table and drinking a beer like that and watching sports after you get home, that was the perfect end of the day for me. My boot thing that I still love, I love getting new knives. Like, just if there's a knife that comes in the mail or, like, anything that I can cut stuff with, I'm like, this is pretty cool. And I think that's very boot.
That definitely being into knives. You know what I was thinking about the other day? This is just a random, like, off topic.
This is lovely. That's awesome. That's a good one that you're showing us, Chaps.
Just has a bunch of knives within reach of his little knick-knack table.
Wait, what do you have in your hand?
A knife!
No! When I was a kid down the Jersey Shore, I won a knife at the boardwalk. But it was a retractable. It was like a plastic knife that it looked like a knife. And when you stabbed your friends with it, the knife part would retract into the knife. So it looked like you were really stabbing them. And so all week long down the shore, I'm like stabbing everybody. I'm like, oh, whatever. And my parents took it away because they were afraid I was going to accidentally mix it up with one of our steak knives and like shank my brother.
Fair concern.
Yeah. But I remember being so, I was like, how dare you take my knife away?
I mean, the first knife that you're allowed to have as a little kid, there's something special about that. My grandfather got me a pocket knife. And it was just a real tiny one, like 3 inches long or something like that. And he was like, okay, we're going to go fishing, get the cane pole, because we would just go catfish fishing in these little canals that were by their house. And we would go out there. And once I caught a catfish, he brought it over to like the table where they were cleaning the fish. He's like, all right, now you got to put that knife to use, boy. Like, go ahead and gut that fish. And I was like, mother of Christ.
Whoa. Holy
I have
shit.
To take the guts out of this thing. And really, when you think about it, even though you are eating it, that's a tough thing to make a kid do, right?
Like, yeah.
Take
yeah.
all the innards out of an animal. Like, it's alive still. And he's like, take that rock and smash it in the head. It'll kill it faster. It's the
Jesus.
Thing to do.
Jesus.
Like, yeah. Okay.
And it's like in seventh grade. They're like, all right, everyone, cut the cat open on your science table. And you're like, what?
And Kate
oh, fuck.
Pops her head up from back behind the window where she's still looking for bugs.
yeah, I'm like, not now. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite Kate things is that I know that your entire high school science class was about finding bugs.
Yeah, I got sent to the remedial science wing, and that was what I did. I wish I still had my displays that I made.
They just had a pest problem, and they were like, send all the dumb kids to pick up bugs.
Well, what they would do is they would literally send us into the school's backyard with nets.
Exactly.
And we just that was science class. We chased bugs.
I mean, it's really a good way to go about it, I guess. Like you
kept me busy.
You're doing a little bit of discovery. Our science classes, my friends were very nervous about taking the skin off the cats. Like whenever you have to remove the flesh, like you have to remove it from the actual muscle. I used to love doing that.
Did you?
I gotta tell you, I've never done anything remotely like this. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You never
Kyle.
Had to dissect cats?
No, never did dissected
science,
anything in my
science
life.
Science pogue.
Did you guys yeah. find science kittens pogue. Inside the cats? Did anyone
oh
find
sometimes there'd be
yeah.
kittens in the cats?
Yeah,
yeah,
we found some kittens in
Kate's disgusted.
In biology.
Why
and
would
that
they
smell.
Have us,
you can't get past that
no,
smell.
Formaldehyde and like flesh that wants to rot but can't. Yeah, it's
yeah.
terrible.
It looks like the skin of the cats look like somebody took some testicles and just let it soak for like 4 days in some alcohol.
I mean, that's kind of what happened.
Curl up next to my cat after this. And
all right,
nice
let's move on
snuggle.
To safe rounds and alibis. Kyle, we'll start with you.
End of the year is coming up. End of the year, so I want to put together a best of episode for Zero Blog 30. So if you have mm-hmm. a round or an interview that was your favorite, go ahead and leave us a review, a 5-star review on iTunes with that round you want. If you can, put the episode number because all of them blend together and I have no recollection. But I'll dig up the real good one. So if you got something, leave us a review. Let us know what you want in the best of and I'll throw it together and we will get it out there for the holidays so that when we're off, you guys have something to listen to as you're on duty at 2/7.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, that'd be great if they're listening to it on, like, a Bluetooth and then me saying, fuck those NCOs while you're on duty. That'd be great.
2/7, you have my support. Screw cons and chaps. My God.
Cons, what do you got?
Yeah, sorry. We're just trying to mold young Marines. That's all. Mm-hmm. 2021, Candles by Kyle. It's happening. Did you guys see this candle that Kyle made the other day?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it's beautiful.
Dude, you could sell that thing for $100 at Crate and Barrel.
Which is...
Give it to Asa Akira. Really she'll do it.
Yeah. So we got to figure something out with that. Chaps, somebody asked me, how do you get it? We've talked about this a ton, but somebody recently, and I didn't know where to send them in terms of the episodes, but how do you get a dog to stop barking?
Well, there's a bunch of different ways. One is like... If you start earlier as a puppy, it's a lot easier, just like anything else. But if it's an older dog, the immediate correction whenever it does start barking, and you have to remember, the biggest thing is don't accept it in any circumstances. Like if you want a dog to do something, you constantly have to be consistent. So one of the best ways to do it when they're little is pinching up on the nerves in their mouth. Like you grab them by the snout, stick your finger in, and whenever they bark, you pinch up really hard, and that will get them to stop essentially opening their mouth in any way except for like to eat and drink, and that's the best way to do it. But a verbal correction will work as well, as long as you do it right from the beginning. And if you think that they're playing and having a good time and barking and you let them do it, then it's unrealistic to expect them to know the difference. Like that's why I think like with on the bed and on the couch, it drives me insane when people have rules for their dogs. They're like, you can get up on the bed, but not on the couch or this chair. The dogs aren't going to know that. You have to make them furniture is okay or furniture is not okay. You can't, like, pick and choose.
Yeah. Like, oh, wait, I'm in the living room. It's cool here, but I'm not allowed in the bedroom. They can't tell right. the difference.
Unless the dog is old and, like, getting smarter. Like, I do let Gus up on the outside couch, but he doesn't get up on the inside couches. But if we're outside, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just get a cat. He never barks.
True. Also, I want to give a shout-out to Baby Dale. Baby Dale's been doing this thing in the morning that is, like, the cutest thing ever. 6:50 on the dot every day is when, like, the sun starts coming up here and breaks into, like, our master bedroom in the back. So when that the sun comes up, Baby Dale runs out of him and Gus's bed, runs up the little couch that we have in our room that goes up to the bed, and he does, like, this power slide into being, like, Baby Spoon in my arm. And it is just, like, the cutest thing ever.
That's great. Okay, last thing. I happen to be listening to another podcast by two gentlemen who may or may not have worked in the White House at one point in their lives. And they were saying something, and it just annoys me when people say this word this way, because I think it makes them think they're saying it correctly or sounding smarter than other people. But it's Iraq, all right? It's not Iraq. Okay, you didn't go to Iraq, chaps. All right, it's just Iraq. Just call it Iraq. I don't need to hear people.
Yeah, we're still hillbillies here. We can't be pronouncing things correctly. That's Iraq. Not the American way.
Yeah, get out of here, yeah. Iraq.
And Iran.
I've been calling it Iraq.
Iran.
Yeah, and you two gentlemen, you know who you are because I know you listen to CBT. You better, bitches.
Tommy Vitor.
Mm. Yeah. I honestly don't know which one it was that was saying it, but I think they were both saying it incorrectly as far as I'm concerned.
And why didn't they go with Blog Save America? Mm. Would have made a lot more sense, right?
Yeah, totally.
Kate, what do you got?
Nothing. I'm just uncomfortable.
Uh-oh. Yeah, we saw your baby's the size of a brick.
He's the size of a brick, and I
And you need to shit one.
I need to take a dump soon, so I have no save rounds.
Cons had a wildly inappropriate tweet to follow that one up.
Kate did not. No, Kate did. I followed up with Kate in person. She was not offended.
That was...
What was it?
Well, so basically, I have this little app that every day tells me how big the baby is, and it said, on this day, your baby is as long as a standard brick. So I tweeted out brick by brick with that little screenshot of that, to which Cons replies... Long time stoolie hangout, Kate's womb.
Yikes.
I was insinuating that her singular child...
Cons, I hate to give you Firewatch on Army-Navy weekend, but
no, listen,
I think
it's
you know
so funny.
You deserve it.
No, listen, it's so funny how two people can look at the exact same thing and view it differently. I said that, and I'm thinking like, oh yeah, the baby that's growing inside Kate right now, stoolie hanging out in her womb... And I quickly realized when Kyle tweeted the office gif at me, like, oh, that could be interpreted as, like, stoolies go hang out inside of Kate's womb, and that's inappropriate.
Well, yeah, because that's what you said. Yeah.
A guy named Steve replied to you, lots of room for activities. So thank you, Cons. Yeah.
But you have to admit you did kind of set yourself up for that.
I did. So that's on me. But no save rounds for me. I'm just excited to go to West Point. I love being around the cadets and midshipmen. I fucking love it.
Yeah, we're gonna do our best to find our way places that maybe we shouldn't be, but
yeah,
safely. So
I fucking love buses. I don't talk about it a lot.
The Navy's got 200 of them.
Navy's got 200 buses. Get out of here! So I can't wait for that too.
That's a nice bus.
That's a nice. Whoa, is that a bus? Yeah. So yeah.
So Pete Navy.
Bus with 200 cadets in the middle. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Also, I want to say before we transition off of Kate, I don't understand a uterus and how it grows. Like, that to me is bizarre.
Like, dude, I've been...
A baby could just, like, start pushing it out. It's like doing renovations in your belly.
I'm doing a blog right now where I've kept track. I keep this notebook list of every single thing I've Googled since this pregnancy started. Did you know... Since like the Homo sapiens came around, there's been an estimated 170 billion of us over the course of time, and every single one of us had to go through this process and be born, and none of us still understand how it works. Like, none of us are like, it's like one of the most things we all have in common that we're all like, what the fuck?
Well, When a man and a woman love each other.
Margaritas.
Yes.
But it doesn't even have to be that way, Kyle. Too simplistic.
That's
you
true.
You can go down to the local laboratory.
Yeah.
I just mean the body stuff. Like, what the fuck? Like, why are my nips the size of Haagen-Dazs lids? You know, what's
going on
there?
Well, I don't really have anything for my portion of
Sheesh.
Yikes.
Yeah. My goodness.
Beat Navy.
Absolutely.
Oh, and I'll push longtime toolies. That candle holder is going to be in a video. It's queued up on the YouTube. So
go ahead,
check out Zero Block 30 YouTube. We put up segments from every ish episode. I'll say every, but you know I miss a few here and there. And longtime toolies YouTube, check that out too. Because Chaps, Kate's up there. If Cons ever does.
Hey, how about I built those shelves last night?
Integrity violator. That's okay.
Mm-hmm. You installed them.
Yeah, so check that. Yeah.
Same.
All right, that's it, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back on Tuesday with some fresh takes. We'll get a recap of the Army-Navy game from Cons and Kate there as well. It'll be a good time. Make sure you watch the game, hang out, at least watch the pregame ceremonies because I think that it's going to be very, very different with just having the two schools there. I think it's going to be an incredible scene. I think it's going to be awesome.
One thing I was actually thinking about, we'll definitely have a flyover of choppers because we have that for home games. I'm wondering, though, because obviously for every year for Army-Navy, we have choppers and they have jets. I wonder if they're going to be able to fly jets over Mikey because it's a much smaller stadium than Lincoln Financial or the airspace. I don't know. I would definitely say they could.
You know what they should do, though? Because it's Trump's last Army-Navy game as the president, a flyover of Air Force One. Low flyover of Air Force One would be unbelievable.
Yeah, because he's more than likely, my guess is he's going to fly to Stewart Air Force Base, which is about 20 minutes from West Point, so it could easily be done.
Yeah, I think that'd be incredible. All right, that's it. We'll see you next time. Sound the retreat.